Welcome to Beyond the Pod, presented by SodaStick.com.
Brunette, he moves, Brunette back in, he scores! Minnesota has upset the Colorado Avalanche! Andrew Brunette, the game-winning goal!
Here are your hosts, the second greatest scorer in Gopher hockey history, Pat Micheletti, and the second greatest hockey analyst on this podcast, Brandon Molesky.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Beyond the Pod. I am Brandon Molesky, as always, joined by former Golden Gopher great, Pat Micheletti. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Brandon. How are you?
Good. We are taping this podcast on Thursday, July 29th in the morning, so one day after free agency. So if you are watching this or listening to this a day or two later, obviously things can change by a free agency, so we apologize if something has changed differently than what we're talking about. But for now, we'll talk about the information that we know, and we'll begin with former Minnesota Wild player, now analyst for Bally Sports North, Ryan Carter. Ryan, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. I want to ask you, Ryan, first about the process of free agency. Obviously, I've never been in that situation. How many times have you gone through free agency, and what is that first day like as a player?
Well, I've had two experiences going through free agency. I kind of knew I was trying to go back with the team I was playing with, New Jersey, and you just wait till the 11th hour and maybe you can squeeze a couple more bucks out of them. I think they're doing the same thing to you as a player, you know. The other time it was, you got to see what's out there, and it can be really nerve-wracking. I think that years past, and I don't know when they implemented it, but that the speaking period, or I call it like the courting period, where Cubs had the ability, they had the ability to talk to somebody and kind of figure out their plan. And if they missed out on somebody, they maybe still had a day or two to go to plan B and figure that out and where the dollars should go. That was taken out, but it didn't seem like it was really taken out of the CBA. There was deals reported the day before free agency opened. So I never went through it in that regard where you could talk to people and see what it was like. I think that would be a much different experience. But I think we saw that it wasn't fully legal yesterday, though, because you used to see deals all come in the first hour of free agency, and then there was some little deals done later, and everybody's like, oh, good, we got our day done. It was fantastic. Yesterday, I think you saw some discrepancies in dollars for certain levels of players and guys getting maybe more term or different deals being tossed around. So kind of more an old school free agency type of day. But for me as a player, it was both exciting and nerve wracking. I mean, you break into the NHL and you kind of can't wait for free agency. That's when you're 27 years old and you're like, okay, this is where I can pick where I want to play. But sometimes it doesn't always go your way.
That first time around, did you just take yourself out of looking at other teams and want to go back to Jersey, or what was that? What did that all entail?
Yeah, no, I wanted to go back to Jersey. I felt for me wanting to win, we had a good team that year coming back. No, we had lost Zach. That's when Zach signed with Minnesota, Parisi.
Right.
And we had lost a couple pieces, but nonetheless, it was a good group, a good culture. I really felt a part of it. The room was tight. So I don't think I was really going to be wooed by dollars elsewhere. I think the fit was right for me there. I enjoyed it. So that's ultimately why that was. But as everybody knows, Lou Lamoriello can be pretty good with the pencil, keeping pretty sharp. So,
well, the big signing for the Wild yesterday, defenseman Alex Goligoski, 1 year, $5 million. How many interactions have you had playing against him? Because obviously, you were at Mankato when he was playing for the Gophers. I'm sure at some point you would cross paths a little bit in the National Hockey League, even if you're in different conferences. Do you have any memories of individual battles with him, or what kind of player was he to play against?
Yeah, no, I don't think I recall any individual battles. He's one of those guys that I think surprises you. He's not like the biggest, most intimidating defenseman out there, but all of a sudden you go into a corner or a battle or even just a play where you're thinking, okay, I'm looking past this guy a little bit for what I need to do next. And next thing you know, he's got the puck and he's going out of the zone. You know, like a sneaky, smart player, plays the position really well. He's kind of unassuming, but uses that to his advantage, right? And really good, hard to play against it. And I think a good comparison is like a Jared Spurgeon too. Like he's hard to hit, good mobility, makes a good pass. You have to respect it. Can walk the blue line on the power play, so he can just do a lot of things really well. It's just when you go into it, at least when I first came into the NHL too, and even when I played college, the D that you were concerned about were the big 6'4" guys using coho wooden sticks, and they were going to chop you in half, you know. And he wasn't that guy,
right? And for what, he's 36 now. I mean, it appears to me after watching him from a year ago, he hasn't lost a step either. I mean, he can really skate.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the strength of it, and I think any defenseman that's playing into their late 30s, you know, the game's changing. It's all about mobility, right?
Yeah,
If you can't skate, I don't know that you can play. So, kudos to him for keeping that a strength of his game at this age. It's really a non-issue in terms of what I see on the ice or what I've seen from him. He's still good with it. So, he can wheel out there.
What do you know about the other two free agents, you know, I should say NHL free agents that they get one-way contracts in Frederick Goudreau and Dmitry Kulikov? I'll be honest, I don't know a ton about those two.
Yeah, Freddie Goudreau, I don't know a bunch about him either. But, you know, and especially after last year, I think was kind of his breakout year, and he was in Pitt, and with the divisional alignment and stuff, it was like, whatever happened out east, though.
Right.
Figure it out later. Yep. It's like I didn't follow it closely, you know?
Yep. So I'm with you.
Right.
But I think he had a good year. Everything I read is that he's very versatile, which I think will be good. I think you look at the Wild and their bottom six, maybe their fourth line, one thing they lacked is a little bit of speed, right? So if he can bring that element to it and to the penalty kill, that would be huge. And obviously faceoffs became an issue down the stretch. I don't know what his numbers are like in the dot, but he can play center and wing, so the hope is regardless of where he plays, he can take faceoffs on a strong side, right? So that would be advantageous. In terms of Kulikov, I actually played with Kulikov in Florida.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I had a shot of espresso in Florida is what I call it. Not there long enough to have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
He was like a first round pick, I think 14 overall.
14, yeah.
Yeah. And he came, I think they wanted him to be like a really, offensive defenseman, and he had that pressure and he turned the puck over, kind of, not a liability defensively, but he just created too many mistakes. Right. But I think he's changed a little bit, and that pressure of having to carry the offensive load, has waned, and now he's turned into like a defense, and he can skate. He's pretty good, pretty mobile in that regard too. Straight line skater. He can move. But yeah, I think he'll be a sound. He's not going to be like as physical or as mean as a Carson Soucy, but I think he can fill that role.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, I look at, and don't get me wrong here, I'm thrilled for every player that got the most money that they could get. That being said, it's also a day of where teams overpay and they make mistakes, and especially on the term of a contract. And I think the Wild did a really good job with their discipline yesterday and not chasing somebody just because everyone else was doing it, you know?
I think you hit the nail on the head there. I haven't been in a GM's room before, but it seems that the biggest mistakes they make are given too much money or too much term. So the lesser of two evils is probably walking away with, you know, without getting anything, mm-hmm. than walking away with getting a guy and having paid too much, because it ends up costing you more down the road.
Right.
I think reading Bill Guerin's comments, I think he had a good approach to it. He goes, hey, there's still a lot of summer left. And he's right. That sparked me to think about it a little bit. And I went back to the expansion draft in Seattle and how they took like 9 defensemen or something. They have a lot of D-men. So clearly they saw early on that was going to be a value point. Now, I think Colorado's already taken one in McDermott. I don't know mm-hmm. who else has been moved, but there are probably defensemen to be had out there in the trade market.
Yeah.
Teams also get themselves in spots where Come roster time, you've got to get down to 23, and where does this guy fit? And you can get a decent deal at that time too. So I think patience, hopefully it does pay off. It looks like there's a big hole right there, maybe a swing and a miss. But as Bill Guerin said, I think there is still time to fill that.
Well, I think maybe some of the lack of the spending also has to do with the buyouts of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. I know this story is a couple weeks old now, Ryan, but were you surprised? I guess the Parise buyout, not as surprising, but how shocked were you specifically with Suter being bought out?
I think it, for me, was I surprised? Absolutely. In the buyout, yeah, for both of them, quite frankly, I was surprised. It wasn't a surprise to anybody that the relationship between Parise and the club maybe had gone a different direction. But still, I didn't think buyout was maybe the vehicle that was going to have them part ways, right? So, but to have them both come down, yeah, I was completely floored. I mean, I think I hit refresh on Twitter like four times trying to figure out, like, is this for real? Is this for real? I think it's going to end up being good for the player. Both players. I mean, you saw Suter, right? Like, he's already in Dallas. There's reports that Parise's going back to Long Island. So they're going to get chances to play. I think Suter's going to end up making a little bit more money out of the deal, too.
He is.
He's going to net a little more, which will be okay.
Yeah, about 11.
Yeah. And then when I analyze it from the Wild's perspective, and I've said this before, I think of Joel Eriksson-Ek, Kevin Fiala in this regard. Eriksson-Ek took a huge step this year because Mikko Koivu wasn't here, right? And he got to play those minutes, and he was on the power play. He's the number one guy in the kill, and he really blossomed. Kevin Fiala was a good player for us, but as soon as Jason Zucker went out, he took another step, and he became a go-to star for us. Who those guys are that are going to get those minutes in season, it remains to be seen. But I think that that can't go unmentioned when you talk about the buyout set. There is opportunity. That recipe has worked for Bill Guerin, and that probably weighed in on part of his decision to buy these guys out.
Yeah, and you know, and when you look at this team, you know, I mean, the fans want instant gratification now. They want a Stanley Cup now. They go into every season thinking, you know, we're going to win a Stanley Cup now. But you also have to look at it from a realistic standpoint, too. Is this team ready to win a cup? Sure, certain things can happen where, you know, you get lucky, you ride this wave, and, you know, your goaltending's unbelievable, and you get like Montreal and you have a crack at the cup. You know, this team may be a couple years away, 2-3 years away. That's okay. And I say that because you've got a Boldy coming in. You got a Rossi coming in. You've got an Addison coming in. And you know, Ryan, from playing, it takes a little time to get acclimated to the league, get comfortable in the league, and get to that point. And so, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world if they take a step back before they go back up.
No, I agree with you. I actually agree with you wholeheartedly. And in regards to development of young players, I do believe that they need to spend some time in the American Hockey League, regardless of where they're drafted or how good they are. Now, that could be challenging too, right? So what are you going to do? You have roster spots where Boldy and maybe Rossi or some of these young prospects, they could play NHL minutes. But if you're looking for the long term and what's best for the player in the club, maybe spending some time in Iowa or playing in the American League, learning how to be a pro in that regard, and being able to make mistakes without a ton of pressure would be huge. But in order for that to be the case, it might be a struggle for the Wild for a little bit. They may have to put some people in there that fans are like, who is this? Or, you know, why is this person playing over Rossi or Boldy? But I think if you do have the long-term plan, and the long-term vision, there are the prospects and a lot of pieces here right now that I think they can build around to win. It's just a matter of time. And I think they have to be cautious to make sure they do it appropriately.
I don't want to put you on the spot here, but looking at a guy like Rossi, okay, and a guy like Boldy, and we saw Addison, you know, is it crazy to believe that all three could be on the roster opening night?
No, I don't think it. I don't think it's crazy to believe that. I actually think it's probably more likely than not likely. Which again, that's where for me, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, right? I'm unsure of it. You know, like Rossi hasn't played in a while. Do you want to throw him right there in the NHL and say, "Hey, you're a number nine pick last year. Go do it." You know, we need this spot filled. We have some guys. Go learn each other. You know, and there's a chance that boom takes off and runs with it, right? It could be, but there's also a chance that it goes the other direction, right? So I think there's some risk in playing those young guys, like I said, in their development and the development of the organization. Bill Guerin all along has said that these guys have to come in and earn it. They just don't have a spot. But I think the pressure of maybe not having guys and the things that transpired yesterday maybe pencils them in there with a little bit darker lead.
Ryan, I know we still have some time here. We still have about a month and a half before, you know, training camp and preseason begins for the Wild. But at what point do we get concerned with the Kaprizov and Fiala contract negotiations? Because it doesn't seem like there's been a lot of positive news coming out of those two.
I don't know that you get concerned. These things seem to, in most negotiations.
Hey, yours went to the 11th hour, right?
Even mine go to the 11th.
Right.
nothing happens till then, you know. So, but you know, the difference is like Kaprizov really doesn't have a lot of leverage, you know, and he really doesn't. He can go back to Russia, but then if he still wants to play in the NHL, he has to come back. So, you know, if it's term that he's waiting on or whatever it is, I don't know what the bridge is. I'm not in that room, but I just don't see that Kaprizov signs in the United States, plays with Minnesota for 56 games just to have leverage to go back to play in Russia. I don't see that as the case. I think he wants to be here. I think that's the ultimate trump card is if you want to play in the NHL, it's going to be with the Minnesota Wild. So I think a deal gets done. I just don't know. I don't know when. And then with Fiala, I think it's probably comes down to money and term, right? Like how much money do you want? How much term do you want? And what's better? I think even looking at what happened yesterday, you got to give Bill credit for not overspending. I think he values the RFAs, you know, the restricted free agents, versus the UFAs, the unrestricted free agents, because you could go give some UFAs some term over the next couple of years when they know they're strapped for cash because of the cap and other things. And then you go back to your RFAs and say, what do you want me to give you? I can't give you. All I have is $5 million left. Either you take it or you don't. Otherwise, you can't play. I don't have any money. You know.
That sounds like a company I work for.
He left some in the coffers for the RFAs to say, "Hey, listen, guys, I'm working with you here. You know, like I didn't go spend all this money because you guys are valuable to me. Now let's get a deal done."
How about the the Russo reported the other day, basically before free agency began, that maybe the Wild are backing out of the Jack Eichel sweepstakes, that the cost is too much. Regardless of cost and what you'd have to give up, what are your thoughts on Jack Eichel and, you know, the injury, and people have concerns about him and the culture? Does he improve when he gets away from the Buffalo culture? What do you think of Eichel and that whole situation? And would you want him on your roster?
Yeah, I think you'd take a chance on him, especially with the way that they have built probably the culture in that locker room, the Wild locker room right now. It seems that they've got a pretty good pack mentality. And if that stray dog comes in and maybe has the wrong energy, the pack fixes it. You know what I mean? And that's a good thing. So even if he is a star and he comes in, I don't think he comes in all of a sudden it's his team, right?
Like, no, right.
The core group of guys are still there and he kind of has to fall in line. So I wouldn't be concerned with any of that ancillary stuff. I think he's a good player. And I think he would help, you know, it goes back to though, what's the question? I think Billy's been asked, you know, he doesn't believe that the center has to be the one that drives the offense on the line. It can come from the wingers as long as you have a center that can fill a role and do certain things. So I don't know that you have to go out and spend a ton of money just to have a center, right? Eichel certainly may be the best one out there, but I also don't think that you can think about this without putting cost into it, right? So if you're giving him futures and you're paying him $10 million and you're $12 and $14 million under the cap for the next couple of years, it's just super costly to give futures the guys that you need on cheap $900,000 deals away right now, because you'll need them if you're eating that $10 million, right? So just a tough deal to get done, I believe.
Yeah, unless Buffalo comes down in what their demands are, when you look across the league, how many teams can do that? You know, yeah. I think that's an awful lot to ask, for the situation that's involved.
Well, I think it makes sense why there hasn't been a deal consummated yet. It hasn't been done, right? Yeah. Because there's only certain teams that are saying, okay, what's going to get me to a cup? It's a number one center. And a lot of times those teams are already competitive and good. And in order for that to be the case, they're usually spending right towards the cap. So All these teams that are in it likely don't have $10 million to take on.
Right.
Buffalo would have to take money back. So if they're asking for only futures, there's just no chance these trades can be done.
Yeah, right.
Final question for you, Ryan. Do your kids ask you about your framed picture of your jersey in the background there? Do they ever ask, what's that all about, Daddy?
No, my kids are oblivious to anything that isn't theirs.
Well, I like it.
And let's go on record. You are not putting your name in the hat for the open assistant coaching job at Mankato.
No, I'm not. Is it open? Is it open?
Darren Blue.
Darren left. Yeah, right. Yeah, he left. He's moving on. I don't know if they're going to hire somebody else.
I'm thinking, I don't want Dan Myers to beat you there.
Ryan's too expensive, let's be honest.
Well, if Dan Myers can get the job, I'll be a reference just so that I don't have to work with him anymore. So how's that?
Either that or my son might go after it too, you never know, right?
Right.
I think Pat's trying to push you into that job so he can take your job. No, I think that's what this comes down to.
Pat's not trying to do that.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate your time as always. We'll talk to you again.
Have a good summer. Good to see you guys.
Yep. Yeah, right, thanks. See you.
Ryan Carter, former Minnesota Wild forward, now analyst for Bally Sports North. And before I talk to you, Pat, let's talk about SodaStick.com. Go to SodaStick.com, get your original Minnesota sports-inspired goods. If you haven't seen this stuff yet, you got to check it out. One of my favorite designs, I'm wearing it right now. It's the Center of the American Hockey Universe shirt. All of their apparel is screen-printed here in Minnesota on super soft, super comfy shirts. You will love it. And we're going to hook you up with 15% off your next order. So use the code KFAN for 15% off. That's SodaStick.com, original Minnesota sports-inspired goods. Use the code KFAN for 15% off your next order. I also like this North State hat.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the old Minnesota North Stars.
Yeah, I might take that from you.
Which the North Stars aren't the only Minnesota thing to leave for Dallas. Now Ryan Suter has left for Dallas.
Yeah, I think it's probably a good fit for him. He's got some quality defensemen to play along where he doesn't have to be on the offensive side of things. And he can just, play his methodical Ryan Suter type hockey, protect his body. He does that so well. 4 years, I obviously Dallas probably had to give that to him because other teams were involved, but,
how about a no move clause too?
And a no move. Yeah. You brought up a good point yesterday in our conversations, the buyouts, if that were to happen, is not going to be substantial.
Judging by, Bill Guerin was asked yesterday during his press conferences about, hey, do you regret the Suter buyout? Because basically they're strapped for cash. And guess what? They're going to be strapped for cash for the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah.
I bet like 5 years from now, Bill Guerin's just going to go on a spending spree. He's going to, so much is going to be available 5 years from now.
That's why you have to kind of, be okay with the way things are, right? We knew going in, there was no easy solution or answer to the contracts of Zach and Ryan. If you don't buy them out, you take the risk of a recapture. Should they retire, get hurt, whatever the case, right?
Yeah.
And you're really taking that risk. Now at least you know exactly what you have, what you have to deal with. And listen, they've got some young guys that they drafted that they are counting on to develop and be part of their core. And I think that's okay. Okay. You know, I really do. I mean, just because, you know, you don't make the big splash in free agency or via trade, doesn't make you a bad team. You know, if I look at their roster going in, Brandon, to next year, you know, it certainly can vie for a playoff spot, right? You know, is it good enough to win a cup? You know, maybe not. You know, who knows?
It's going to depend on performance of young guys, which is a huge question mark. Yeah.
You know, is Kaprizov and Fiala going to perform like they did? Is Hartman going to be the same player? Is Ek and Foligno and, you know, guys like that? You know, they'll compete. They will compete. There's no doubt about it. And their back end, well, you got Brodin, Dumba, and Spurgeon, right? And you add a Galagoski.
And Galagoski, yeah.
You know, it's not like you're saying, oh, my God, how are we going to prevent goals? It's not all doom and gloom because they didn't go and overspend, like paying Blake Coleman $5 million for 6 years when you're getting a guy who's a good player, but he's a third line player and he's making $5 million. I wouldn't have liked a deal like that.
Yeah, so. I'm glad they didn't overspend, but I think even Bill Guerin admitted yesterday that, you know, they missed out on some guys that they wanted.
Yeah.
I think Nick Foligno is one of those guys, and
no doubt
probably had money slotted in that they could have used on other players, and they missed out because they're waiting on Foligno and hoping to bring him in. What I loved about that yesterday is, you know, Bill Guerin is so candid with the fan base and with the media, and is honest. And how many times have you heard a GM admit?
Never.
Especially on draft day or free and say, you know, this didn't go the way we wanted, or we wish we would have had this or that. That never happens. And I know a segment of the population will go, well, he's a terrible GM because he didn't get what he wanted. But I kind of find it like I root for a guy like that because let's face it, with general managers, Pat, sometimes we expect these guys to be perfect and hit everything. You almost have to look at it like a baseball player where guess what? You're going to get outs. But if your batting average is higher than other batting average, you're going to be more successful, and you just got to have more hits than you have misses. These guys are going to have misses, and I appreciate that he's open and saying, yeah, this didn't go exactly the way I wanted to, because now everything he says in the future, I have trust in him. I have belief in him.
And Brandon.
And I want to root for him.
Yeah. We only know what we read, too, you know, with numbers and and all that and player and character.
The Eichel trade stuff's a great example. We have no idea what they're asking for, what the price is.
No. And then there's so much more that goes into it, and future years and where are we going to be. And, you know, it's not like they haven't gone through every scenario possible. You know, like people are saying to me, well, they didn't even try to trade Parisi or Suter. Well, how do you know that?
They tried it. They almost had a trade with Parisi 2 years ago.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and well, you could have got this. And then I'm like, well, you know what? Maybe you know that. I don't know that, you know, and Bill Guerin hasn't said that. And nor does he need to the people either.
But Pat, to your point earlier, I think you kind of nailed it with the recapture penalties. I think that's the part, that's the element of this that people are leaving out when why they bought out Suter specifically is if you were to trade Suter and Parisi, you still are at risk of recapture penalties if they retire early, which let's face it, with Parisi, that's could be likely.
Yeah.
You know, what are the odds of him playing another 4 years given his declining skill? I guess Suter could go another 4 years, but you're still asking a defenseman at the age of 41 to play. Whereas when you buy him out, yeah, it's a loss, but we know our loss and we have it. And we're not going to get surprised 3-4 years from now with an exorbitant amount of money that's going to handcuff the team.
They paid for the certainty of knowing where instead of the uncertainty of potential penalties. And at least now they can plan accordingly, draft accordingly, spend accordingly, and know what they have, right? And listen, people talk, oh, well, we can't spend any money in free agency in the coming years. Maybe so. But in reality, Brandon, and I just don't know of how many free agents have gotten a team to the promised land. Okay. Look at Bobrovsky in Florida, right? He's on, yeah. And he may not even be their starting goalie next year. And you got him for like 6 or 7 more years at $8 or $10 million. You know, that's tough to recover from. And so I'm as much as we love free agency and love the movement and love the signings, more often than not, they don't work out.
Well, and ultimately, Pat, here, our biggest concern should still be Kaprizov specifically, of the Kaprizov-Fiala contract negotiations. You know, I'm with Ryan that I'm not buying the KHL stuff. I don't understand why a guy who's as competitive he is would go to a secondary league instead of playing with the best. But there is still some current concern to me that he's going to – that his side is going to hold out for the shortest-term contract possible, right? Yeah. You know, anything under 5 years for me, I'm not going to be happy with. You know, if you're signing him to 3-4 years, which is what he wants, because he wants a chance to go back out into free agency. Because one, there's two things. One, you got him closer to free agency, and so he could leave on a short term. But two, as you said, this team might take a step back before it takes a step forward.
Yeah.
So if you've got him on a 3-4 year deal, and you go a year or two where you don't make the playoffs, or you barely get in, and you're losing in the first round because you're playing these young guys, and you can't grasp the future, I think you risk losing him to a winner at that point. So the Kaprizov, I started the offseason not concerned at all about Kaprizov. I just assumed, wow, this just makes too much sense to sign a 5-6 year deal. It doesn't seem like it's going in the right direction right now.
Well, I'm still not concerned about him, but here's the deal, right? If I'm Bill Guerin, if I do have to give him that short-term deal, I make sure it's a no-move contract.
Well, yes,
you know that's
off. But there is no,
right.
You need the flexibility to trade.
You need that. Yes. You need that. And you say, hey, if I'm giving you this, then you know I have the ability to move.
We're not letting you leave for nothing.
We're not exactly. That's what happened with Gabrick, and you know, and we ended up with nothing for Marion Gabrick. And so that's what I do. Listen, if the kid was 28 or 29 or 30, and you know, he had played here 6-7 years and wanted to get back to his home country and play, different story. He's 24 in the prime of his career. He wants to be the best player in the National Hockey League. He loved playing against the best. I don't think any amount of I don't think money is the issue at all, you know? And so I think they'll get it done. It's you know, not going to be as easy as 1, 2, 3.
One NHL thing before we go, cause obviously there's a lot of NHL news yesterday, but, I talked to you noon to one on the fan. So since I've talked to you at that point, the Colorado goaltender situation, Grubauer leaves to sign a contract with Seattle. And then they gave up a pretty good haul for Darcy Kuemper.
They did, number one pick and a defenseman, and I think a number two or number three for next year.
Conditional three, yeah.
Conditional. You know, it was funny. I happened to go on with our good friend Justin Gard late afternoon yesterday also, and he asked me if anything surprised me. I said, well, yeah, something has surprised me. Colorado lost their number one goaltender. They did everything else by signing who they had to sign, and Landeskog and Makar, but they don't have a goaltender, and you can't win a Stanley Cup without a goaltender. Well, about an hour later, it broke that Darcy Kuemper is the man now in Colorado. So, it was a really good deal for, you know, for Colorado. And the thing is, Kuemper only makes about 5.5. So he probably fits. Grubauer signed for
5.9.
5 or 6.9?
I thought it was 5.9, but it was over like 6 years.
Okay. You know, and obviously they couldn't do that because they have to sign McKinnon.
Yeah.
It was a, you know, another savvy move by Joe Sakic.
Well, good for Kuemper to one. Yeah. He revives his career in Arizona, but he's playing for a winner for the first time here, and he's going to have a great chance to win a Stanley Cup if he can figure it out. Now, if you recall, the Wild have had a lot of success against Kemper. There's always been some yapping and chirping in those games. And clearly they've been, Foligno's been trying to get in his head a little bit. And that'll be even more interesting now that he's on a division rival team.
It will be. It will be. And is Kemper, I don't think he had any pressure in Arizona. There's going to be pressure on him. We saw when he first came in, and granted, he was young here when he was handed the reins by Mike Yeo. It started out not great for him.
He had moments, but
he had moments. And he has matured now. So it'll be interesting. That's for sure.
All right, Pat, we will talk to you next week on Beyond the Pod. Great stuff as always.
I look forward to it, Brandon. Thank you.
All right, he's Pat Micheletti. I'm Brandon Molesky. Another episode of Beyond the Pod is done. It's been, as always, brought to you by SodaSick.com. Use the code KFAN for 15% off. Thank you so much for watching and listening this week. We'll talk to you next week.